excited about this weekend. I know Adrian is too. I'm sure Katie is as well. She is the third member of the broadcast team today as we get you ready for the busy weekend in the world of sports and a lot to talk about. Unfortunately, the Rhinos season came to an end last night. Those Brahmas were just too tough, and they swept the Rhinos 3-0 in their NHL series. So, or their NAHL series, I should say. So, nonetheless, good season for the Rhinos this year. It was the deepest they've gone in the playoffs since they've joined the NAHL. And Corey Herman is going to call into the show in about 15 minutes, and we're going to get a chance to talk to the man who started the Rhinos years ago and get his thoughts on everything, not just for the Rhinos season and also the upcoming plans that he has for a second sheet of ice that went public this week, but also a little NHL playoff puck talk with Corey. Nice. Excited about that today.
That feels like an OG Adrian Broaddus internship segment on Sports Talk. Like when you'd hear Corey Herman just kind of going off into an awesome tangent about playoff hockey and giving his allegiances on air with us for some of those teams up north. I mean, it is so much fun. This is a true throwback, so I can't wait to hear from Corey Herman. I'm so used to calling him Coach Herman, it's so weird not calling him Coach Herman. Corey Herman himself here in the next segment, friend of the program, longtime guest with us here on the show, and excited to talk some pucks with him. Sad that the Rhinos lost yesterday. Shout out to Paige, who helped us with some of the coverage yesterday. It was a close game. I was following it. Close game, and then the Brahmas blew it out in the end. So that's what ended up happening.
You know, and it was 1-1, then all of a sudden, just like that, boom, boom, 3-1. Hard for the Rhinos to come back from that.
Yeah, their playoff hopes, come out as via a sweep, 3-0. They were 2 games over there. They were hoping to play a game tonight, but last night being the final game for the Rhinos and, turn the page on this season, get ready for next season, want to hear the expectations, want to hear some of those off-season goals from Corey Herman himself.
We do as well. That's something that we'll be hearing just in a little bit. So that's going to be coming up on the program today. Excited about that. Also, I'm not sure if this news has gone public yet, but I did get word earlier today that, Adrian, we have lost another member of the 66 team.
No, I didn't see this on social media, Steve.
So, no. David Palacio passed away 4 days ago, shortly after celebrating his 80th birthday, and survived by his daughter, Jessica, and man, oh, man. So, David Palacio was 80 years of age and now has in fact passed on. And that's, again, really tough, tough news. In fact, tell you what's amazing about David Palacio that a lot of people might not even have realized. In 1972, which was 4 years after he graduated, he started working in the music industry with Capitol Records, EMI America Records, EMI Latin Records, and ultimately retired in 2008 as the Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of Univision Music Group. How about that from David Palacio?
Hey, and if you want to talk about the 66 team, I've heard this story from Coach Haskins. I've also, from secondhand tales and all that, but I've also read stories from Ray Sanchez. He actually played an integral part in their 66 win against New Mexico, an overtime win, 67-64, Texas Western over the University of New Mexico. And, shout out to Palacio, who had a huge game in that one. They were down big time. They were trailing by 16 points, and he was only a sophomore at the time. Haskins threw him in at that point, and he ended up coming back and scored only 2 points, but helped completely change the momentum of the game.
He also went to Austin High and is an El Paso native. And you talk about, what he was able to do. In the 1964-65 season, he was a freshman. Palacio could not compete with the varsity, as freshmen were ineligible at the time. So he decided to instead, he was a big part of those inter-squad workouts where freshmen joined the varsity. And according to a great bio about him, I saw that he had the ability and resilience that caught the attention of those already in the program, competed, held his own, made it clear that he intended to stay and not leave. So, you know, he played through his senior seasons, became a reliable guard, and, you know, was there for all those years with Don Haskins and UTEP basketball. So, yeah, another member of the 66 team. It's really interesting, too, all right, because Palacio, if I'm not mistaken, his last reunion with the team was in 86 for the 20th anniversary. Might have been 91, actually, now that I think of it. I think he was actually there in 91 for the 25th anniversary. But after 91, there was a falling out, and David Palacio did not rejoin his teammates at any of the other events. And that included the Glory Road premiere. That included the White House trip. That included the Naismith Hall of Fame. It also included the ESPY Awards. And it's a shame because I always felt like, look, he's in the pictures. He was on the roster. He played. But, you know, of all the players on that team, there was the falling out, and Palacio, after 91, never came back to be part of any of these celebrations. And it's too bad because he's really the only one that that didn't do it. And I was told there were rumors why, and one of the rumors was he was very close to Tony Harper, and he was upset that Harper was really excluded from a lot of the team reunion festivities until much later on in the process. And by the time Harper was mentioned and named as part of the 66 team, I guess Palacio didn't feel the need to come back. That was always the story I heard. But, you know, again, you know, the last, 35 years or so, David Palacio was not part of any of the celebrations, and it's too bad.
You know, that I was seeing, it's not just rumors. I was even seeing recounts of Mo Iba, who said this right here about Tony Harper and the relationship he had with David Palacio. And really, this is what happened in this sense. Harper ends up playing 67 and 68 for the basketball team. And in 66, he was playing baseball for Texas Western. Like, he could have been on the basketball team that year.
No, he was. So the story is, he began the 65-66 season on the roster.
He then switched to baseball.
He was playing on the team. And what happened was that he was also a very good baseball player. Baseball needed help. They asked if he would join the baseball team in January, which he did. So it's like he played November-December basketball, January on baseball, but because he couldn't do both, he played baseball that season, so he wasn't on the roster when they won the national title. But he started the season, and he came back and played the following years. He just, that one year, the 65-66 team, which probably his sophomore year, was asked to play baseball, which the Cohen brothers had, and Tony obliged.
So, I mean, there you go. That's one of the things right there where Palacio was advocating for his good friend, yep. Tony Harper, El Paso guys right mm-hmm. there, and mm-hmm. you know, made it clear if Harper's not involved, he doesn't want to be involved either.
What's interesting, though, is this, is that for the 20th reunion, there was never the mention of that. And even the 25th anniversary, there wasn't the mention. But as things got older, I feel like maybe that's where the feelings became a little, you know, a little more personal than anything else.
Yeah, and when you're talking about 50-year anniversaries, when you're talking about a movie being made out of you, like, those are times where you drop everything and you celebrate, or you get honored for something like that. So he stood by his word right there, and Ray Sanchez called him the Maverick of the team. So there you go.
I was always hoping that Palacio would have just, they would have found a way to bury the hatchet and just said, you know what, long time has passed, you know, while everybody's still around, I want to come back and really be a part of it. But it just wasn't the case. And you remember, we lost Bobby Joe first from the team. And that was tough enough when Bobby Joe passed away. But as the reunions continued and the players got older, you know, we were always kind of wondering, would David Palacio come back and maybe join his former teammates? And it just never happened. So I felt bad that that wedge was drawn, Adrian, where they were beyond the point of reconciliation and could never find a way to have everybody back together.
Such a shame, right? I mean, it kind of is what wasn't in that case. But I will say this, we will remember here on the show David Palacio for being a, you know, a member of that 66 team. He was off the bench. He was a sophomore that year. He was coming off and helping this squad whenever they needed them. And, you know, that it's sad to see when these players pass away and you know, we just have to think, like, there's not too many of them left. You can't take them for granted. And we just celebrated the 60th year of the Texas Western 1966 championship game. This is something that we can't forget as a town. Like, I don't, there's no fatigue in me talking about this. I could talk about 66 basketball all day, because when you win a natty, when you have, when you hang a banner like that, you set an expectation for your program that you don't have any mediocrity around you. So, I mean, that's one of the big things right there. Like, I want to see how this progresses. I want to see more of these players be honored here in the future. And, yeah, I mean, the 66 players who are surviving still, those are ones that you can't take for granted.
Here's who's left. I'm going to be honest. Now, Harper's still here. Okay, we know that. But you have Louis Bedoin, Willie Worsley, Togo Raley, and Neville Shedd. I mean, that's it. That's all that's left from that team. We've lost Willie Cager, Bobby Joe Hill, now Dave Palacio, Jerry Armstrong, Orston Artis, Dick Myers, and Harry Flournoy. So the only ones that are left are David Latin, Neville Shedd, that's two, Togo Raley is three, Willie Worsley is four, and Louis Bedoin is five, and then Tony Harper six. So we have six left from the 65-66 roster. That's tough.
That is tough. You can't take those players for granted, those who are doing this for granted. And yeah, I mean, that's why, again, 60th anniversary, it's you can't take that for granted in itself. Yeah, my thoughts are with the whole Palacio family and with the 66 team. They just lost another one of their brothers right there. And it's sad to hear that he passed away here just recently.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, that's where we start the show today. So again, you know, Palacio was only one of three El Pasoans, Tony Harper being the second and Togo Raley being the third. Those are the three El Pasoans that, you know, were part of that roster. And as we mentioned, Togo still around along with, you know, along with Coach Harper. And that's right now where we stand on all of this. All right. Appreciate everybody getting us going here on the show today. 16 past the hour. When we come back, Corey Herman will join us live on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline, where all of our guests always appear. A little bit later, at 6 o'clock, Albert Noodles Vaitia is going to join us. They had a great event here this week. It was a national convention for college equipment managers. They did that here at downtown at the convention center. And Noodles, his nickname is Noodles, so we'll call him Noodles. Noodles is going to join us live at 6. Tell us how that went down. We're excited about that. So we'll talk to Noodles, and then we'll also have our story time and final countdown with Tim Haggerty coming up a little bit later in the show. First, though, let's go to Charlie 1 and get ourselves this traffic update. Then Corey Herman to talk a little pucks as sports talk continues. In fact, a lot of great guests, including this man who joins us live on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline. He is the founder of the El Paso Hockey Association and the El Paso Rhinos, and has been on with us many times over the years, although not as much recently as we'd like. He's got a lot going on his plate. He's a busy man, very busy man.
Yeah, but good friend of the program, and glad that we got him back.
Great friend of the program, not just good friend. Great friend of the program, the one and only Corey Herman. Hermy, good to have you back, man. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
It has. A lot's been going on since we last talked to you, that's for sure. First off, let me say this. Congratulations to the Rhinos. I know last night didn't go the way you wanted, and the Brahmas were a little too much this round in the playoffs, but your team in the NAHL had a breakthrough season, had a terrific year. You went deep into the postseason, and I'm sure this is the start of what's going to be a lot of great things happening for this this club here in the future.
Yeah, you know, Coach Rivera did a really, really good job this year, and we got the, you know, we got the Rhino culture back, but yeah, we had you know, on the ice, we had our best season yet in the North American League, and we broke every single attendance record we've ever had. So it was a great year. Like, we can't thank, you know, our fans and our supporters and sponsors enough. It was an unbelievable year. And, you know, sometimes, like, you know, you need a, you know, we needed that one good year to kind of start to snowball it. You know, like, next year we have a bunch of young guys. We're one of the youngest teams. So we have a bunch of guys, most of the team can come back. So, you know, we got a good foundation coming back, and we can start snowballing it into, you know, year two, year three, year four. So yeah, we're really excited. We're really excited.
How good has Mike Rivera done as head coach, knowing he's come up through this program starting as a kid when he played really in your youth development, then went into the Rhinos as a player, and now is running the show as head coach? I think it's pretty cool that a guy here in El Paso who's played hockey his whole life, it's a full circle moment knowing he is now behind the bench running the Rhinos.
Yeah, he knows, like, you know, he knows, like, he saw how the arena started. He saw how the, you know, he was here for the very first year of the Rhinos, and he saw how, you know, everything is slowly built. Like, you know, like, he remembers when the rink, you know, didn't look like it does now. Like, there's dirt everywhere, and we just had an ice sheet to skate on. But he knows the culture. Like, he grew up with the Rhinos, and he grew up where, you know, the blue collar, hardworking team, and he was captain for 2 years. But yeah, he knows. Like, he kind of, like you said, he grew up in the program, so he knows how hard everyone has worked, you know, building the rink, building the youth program, and how important, you know, every single thing that happens in the rink, you know, how important it is for the overall success of the organization. You know, the better the Rhinos do, the better youth hockey does. And, you know, the more youth hockey grows, you know, the more fans the Rhinos get. And, you know, so it all just kind of, he understands how everything kind of works together. Yeah. But yeah, he did a really, really good job.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about your NA3 HL team. How have they been doing?
Well, they did really well last year. I helped coach them last year, but we lost out in the first round of playoffs. But next season we're not bringing that North American 3 team back. We're only focusing on the North American League next season. And the reason is, you know, like we need to kind of take a step back and kind of look at the program, and we need to build up our youth program, because, like, all our other programs are in need of ice time, like, yeah, from learn to play, learn to skate, youth hockey, figure skating, you know, public skating, all that stuff. They need ice time, and we kind of had to, you know, say, hey, you know what, let's take a couple years off with the North American 3. Let's really, really build up our other programs, and in hopes, you know, that, you know, in the next, in the future, we can build a second sheet of ice, so we can really, really build our programs. And then when we do, that's when the North American 3 team will come back, because it does serve a good purpose. It serves an unbelievable purpose that we can develop kids through the North American 3 team and to play on the North American League team. And, you know, when guys are hurt or whatever, or they're not playing as much in the North American League, they can come down. However, you know, you know, the program was always built, like, with youth hockey and youth sports in mind. So in order for everything to get bigger, we kind of had to, you know, take a couple years off.
Yeah, no, I
so it's sad. Yeah. It's sad, you know, yeah.
But listen, I mean, that's just what it comes down to. I understand. But once again, the idea was also to put the pipeline in place early on, wasn't it? To know that you could have some players develop and then have the opportunity to come up and play on the NHL team. And like you said, because this club is so young, I feel like you've kind of accomplished that over the last few seasons.
Oh, yeah, we've accomplished that for sure. Like it served a great purpose. Like we had it for 5 years, and it served a great purpose in terms of that, you know. But now, you know, we've got a homegrown coach. He's done a fantastic job, and we feel very, very comfortable that now. And back when I was coaching the team, back 10, 15 years ago, we only had one team to focus on. And like, we all truly believe that we can really, if we're all focusing on just one team, you know, how good can we make that team? Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it does take a lot to have two teams. It does, like, just the staff and everybody's kind of like split, you know what I mean? Like, we're working here, we're working there, but now just focusing on one team, you know, and also focusing on all the other youth ice sports, you know, both of those, you know, we can really, really grow those. And really, really, like, if you're focused on just that North American League team, you know, it'll be successful.
Corey Herman joining us live right now as we continue here on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline on Sports Talk. It's been an interesting week, Hermie. First, we heard the news earlier that with the Coliseum management contract coming up next September of 27, we heard a rumor that UTEP was, they were being targeted to try and take over the management of the Coliseum. And then all of a sudden, we hear about a proposal that is happening with the El Paso Sports Commission and the El Paso Hockey Association. And I found it so fascinating because the Sports Commission talked about wanting to put $12 million into the Coliseum's infrastructure. But then, separate from that, the Hockey Association was looking at a second sheet of ice and down the road, a field house that would be built that could house lacrosse, soccer, volleyball, and even basketball. And I said, this is fascinating to me. And so we had to get you back on to talk about this because, you know, as popular as the event center has been all these years with the Rhinos and figure skating and youth and adult hockey, a second sheet of ice is something that I think a lot of people here would love to see take place.
Yeah. So when we first started the, you know, the El Paso Association back, you know, back when the Buzzards were around and in the Coliseum, we just wanted to, you know, start a program where, you know, kids, like, just to grow ice sports in El Paso. And then we always had a vision, like, okay, like, if we start this up, once we get big enough, we have to find, you know, a building where we can have a consistent schedule and, you know, like a real rink. And after 5 years, you know, the ice plant failed in the Coliseum. And that's when we asked if we could move into the event center and we could transform it into a 24/7 ice rink. So, you know, we were granted that to move into the event center. And, you know, we moved in, I think, back in 2005 or 2006. And when we did move in, that's the Buzzards had already left. I think they had left for 2 or 3 years already. But when we moved in, we were like, okay, we need to have something that can help us, you know, grow all these programs. So that's when we brought the El Paso Rhinos back in 2006. And that was to help us, you know, grow all the ice sports, because it's very, very difficult to grow like ice sports back in 2006. You know, you can't just put a billboard up and say, hey, we're signing up for youth hockey or figure skating. It's very, very difficult. So you need like kind of like an anchor like the Rhinos to kind of get some, you know, some publicity and to get popular and to help us grow. But then, you know, and then, like, you know, every year we would do, we, like the El Paso Hockey Association and the Paso Rhinos, would do different upgrades to the rink, like, to make it better, you know, like more seating and dressing rooms, and then a scoreboard, and then boards, and then all these other things. And then it just slowly and slowly built and built and built. And then when COVID came, and then our vision was always like, we were playing in the Western State Hockey League, but our vision was always to join the North American Hockey League. Like, the North American Hockey League is the cream of the crop. Like, that's the league you want to belong to, you know, like with all the Division I commitments. And, you know, I think last month or just a couple weeks ago, we had one of our former players sign with the Dallas Stars, you know, like, so that was our goal and our vision. So we, so then during COVID, we were like, okay, like the Western States team's doing very, very, very well. You know, like, now I think is the time to get a franchise in the North American League and take that step, because, like, the fans were there, like, we're selling out all the time, and the seating capacity was big enough, you know, and all the other programs were big enough. So that's when we brought the North American League team. And that was 5 years ago. So when we brought the North American League team, we're like, okay, now our next vision, and it's always been a vision, because even when we piped in the event center back in 2006, we made it. Like, we made it when we put in the ice floor. We made it toward where the headers end, that we could attach another rink on the other side. So it's always been in the back of our mind to try and do this. So then we've been slowly kind of putting together, you know, kind of putting it together for, like, the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, we've been kind of slowly putting together, like, what it would take to do that. And then finally, like, this year, we're like, you know what, we're like, all our programs need more ice time. So, you know, like, this is what we're willing to do. Like, this is what the El Paso Rhinos are willing to do. And we're not asking, like, a penny from anyone. Like, we'll do it ourselves. So, yeah, we had this proposal, and we presented it that, you know, if they do give us, you know, a long-term contract, we're willing to build that second sheet of ice on our own, and then in the future, that field house that attaches.
Corey, can you talk about the scope of how big this could be? Like, in terms of really competitions and interest regionally to possibly host large-scale tournaments for youth. So I'm trying to, you know, give it to our audience to know this isn't just for El Paso. This could be huge for the region.
Well, so, like, just to kind of put it in perspective, I'm very, very good friends with the guy that owns the Amarillo Wranglers team, and he built a second sheet of ice. And in Amarillo, Texas, okay, they just, I think it was about a month and a half ago or 2 months ago, it's May, yeah, but about 2.5 months ago, they just had a 40-plus team youth hockey tournament. And I was talking to him because he knew that we wanted to build a second sheet, and everybody knows we do. And he said, like, Herm, like, you wouldn't believe, like, the hotel rooms. He said it was absolutely insane. But the issue is, like, when you have two sheets of ice, you can cancel a whole weekend of programming to host, like, 40 or 50 teams. But when you have one sheet of ice, it's not worth, like, you can't host these big tournaments, because, like you have all these other commitments with ice time and different things like that. So you can't be doing stuff like that. But when you have two sheets of ice, you can start having these 40, 50 plus tournament teams. I mean, 40 plus youth hockey tournaments, and at 20 players per team. And usually, like, when, you know, when a youth hockey team travels, it's like 1 to 1.5 rooms per player. Like, it starts to add up pretty quick. But then you also add in, like, figure skating competitions. So once you get two sheets of ice, all of a sudden you have one sheet, because for a figure skating competition, you have to have two sheets. Like, the skaters practice on one and then they compete on the other, but you can't, they won't allow it just with one sheet of ice. But you start getting 400, 500 participants for a district, like for a competition in figure skating, then you really start to add up some hotel rooms. But just, like, growing, like, the programs, like for us, like when we have a Rhino game, we lose 5 hours of ice time. But if we have two sheets of ice, you know, we could have a Rhino game, and then on the other sheet, we could be still going with, you know, like, and I didn't even mention adult hockey tournaments. Adult hockey tournaments are getting very, very popular, where you have two sheets of ice, and all of a sudden you can have these big adult tournaments. But like with only having one team, like, you know, like with the Rhinos now, you know, if we have a Rhino game, sorry, I was getting another phone call. With the Rhinos playing on a Saturday night when we have to lose 5 hours, we could have figure skating, we could have public skating, we could have any, like all sorts of other things going on the other second sheet of ice. Now, you know, after the second sheet of ice and you add in a field house, you know, you could have all of a sudden one weekend, you could have a 40 team, you know, a youth hockey tournament, then all of a sudden you could have a 40 or 50 team volleyball tournament. You know, like that, you know, in that area, you know, that area is perfect. You know, you got all the interstates that stop right at that area, basically. It's very, very easy. You know, it's kind of the central part of town, I guess.
Corey Herman with us here on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline as we continue on Sports Talk. Hypothetically speaking, if let's just say the Sports Commission was to continue into the long-term management of the Coliseum and obviously the long-term lease for you as well with the Rhinos and the county, what would the timeline be, Hermie? How fast could we potentially see a second sheet of ice built here in El Paso?
Well, like I'm not, you know, I would say anywhere between 3 to 5 years, you know, like it just all depends on everything. Yeah. You know, but I'm thinking like 3, maybe 5 years, I would say, but I'm not a contractor, but that's the kind of scope that I think would be realistic. You know what I mean? Just everything, like, you know, permits and just all that stuff. I would say right around that time.
All right. Well, look, a lot has to happen between now and then anyway. So let's see what goes on. But I'm excited about that. It sounds great for the city. And again, we're always looking about really what's in the best interest in terms of quality of life. And that is something that seems like it could only add to the quality of life here in El Paso.
Well, if you think about it, like, you know, like when, you know, like who would have thought that, you know, ice sports would be starting to be so popular in El Paso? Like the Rhinos, we're considered one of the best organizations in the North American League, like fan wise, like we're at the very, very top.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's incredible. Like you look at, you know, like I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, we won Kraft Hockeyville.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I remember I was there that night for that exhibition game. I know exactly what that was all about. I do.
And if you look at the timeline, you know, like when we started to like where it built to, you know, into the event center and then just how it slowly built, like next season is the 20th year of the Rhinos. You know what I mean? So it's taken us 20 years to kind of get to a point to where, okay, like we're ready to get a second sheet of ice and we're ready to do all this stuff, you know? And that's the thing is sure. it's all on us. Like every single penny is on us to do this. It's pretty exciting.
That's what's so interesting because Nelson's listening to the show right now. Our pal Nelson from Tex-Mex Coins, who's such a great fan, says, I would pay some extra tax money for the Rhinos. And the point is, this doesn't even involve tax money. This is essentially not a dime coming out of any property taxes. This is simply all out of your pocket.
Well, so, yeah, and so with the event center, like all the different upgrades, that have gone into that event center have come from like sponsors or donations or donors or fundraisers and different things like that. And it's almost at $3 million.
Wow.
Like a new ice plant, new Zamboni, like a new scoreboard. Like, I don't know if you've seen the new scoreboard, but that great big scoreboard and, you know, the extra seating and the new dasher boards and just all the brand new air handlers that we can control the atmosphere in the building now, like just all those things. But the reason we do it is to make it better. You know, that's the reason we do it.
people don't even understand. I don't, because we've talked about this on a handful of occasions with you, but not very often. You're actually part of the NHL's team when it's the Winter Classic every year, the Stadium Series. You travel out of town and you help consult with all of the top ice makers around the country in putting this rink together. And I can't even begin to imagine all of the information and all of the tips and knowledge that you've acquired over the years doing this that's ultimately helped you turn the Event Center rink into one of the best rinks for this size that you're going to see in the country.
Yeah, like it's, and you know, all the different things we have to deal with, like the heat and the, you know, the dryness and the humidity and the month, like all that different stuff, like all these different events. I think I've done, I think it's 11 or 12 games now. But everything, every time you go to an event, like we're just in Tampa and we're just in Miami and we did outdoor games in Florida. You know, it's crazy to think about that. Mm-hmm. But like all the different, all these different events, you learn so much and you're with the best of the best. Like these guys, like they know how to design rinks. They know every single thing about an ice plant. They know about humidity. They know about ice quality. They know about the water. Like it's crazy. It's crazy how... Like these guys are the best of the best. And the cool thing about working all these games is they're all helping me do this.
Mm-hmm. That's
so,
right.
So, you know, I just had a big long meeting with one of the smartest guys I know about ice floors and chillers. And we're sitting there like designing, okay, like, you know, like we could do this and this. And, you know, we've sat there and designed it 10 different ways about how we can make this like unbelievable, you know, and like different things for the you know, the new sheet of ice. Like we've sat and talked, you know, many times, you know, and I can pick up the phone and talk to the ice plant guys around and just pick his brain about different things. And it's also helped our arena now, you know, just with all the contacts you have, and you can call somebody and say, hey, I'm having a problem with this. And like right now we make the best possible water to make ice. That's why every single team that comes and plays the Rhinos compliments us that you guys have the best ice around. And we're in the desert. You know, we're in the desert where we're, you know, it's, what is it, 88 degrees today or 90 degrees today?
Yeah.
But our ice is absolutely perfect. Perfect.
Wow. So we've spent so much time talking about this subject. We haven't even had a chance to talk about the NHL playoffs, which means only one thing. We have to get you back on next week to go more in depth with the series going on, how you think it's going to unfold, and who you like to go all the way. So that means you got to promise us to come back on the show next week so we could actually talk NHL playoff hockey with you.
Yeah, absolutely. We got one Canadian team left. We got the Montreal Canadiens. So like I'm a diehard Toronto Maple Leaf fan, but you know I got to switch over to go back and cheer for the Habs this time because we need a Canadian team to win the Cup. It's been since 1993.
Yeah.
You know, we gotta get going here.
Long time.
But yeah, for sure. I promise you. You just tell me what day, and I promise. But I'm going to the Ducks Vegas game on Tuesday. So I'll send you a picture.
Yeah, please, Adrian. When do we need? When? What day next week can we get Corey back?
Any day. Live from the game.
All right, Hermie, you tell us when you can do it, and we'll make time for you. How's that? You just let us know what day you want to do it, and we'll make it work.
Okay, sounds good.
Fantastic. He's Corey Hermann, Hall of Famer, by the way, member of the El Paso Athletic Hall of Fame, and he joins us here on Sports Talk as we continue. 15 in front of 5. Back with more right after this. Wrapping up hour number one here on Sports Talk as we continue. Really enjoyed the conversation with Corey Hermann. Loved what he talked about. Sometimes we don't realize that you don't just have hockey here, but you have a rink that is totally world-class right in the middle of Central El Paso.
I mean, he's so well-connected in the region, too. He was talking about the people who are around it, the science involved in it, like the people who are trailblazing these kinds of this ice that's on for them and the, you know, what could be there for them in the future. And by the way, this is they're funding this. Like, they want to put the money up for this. Like, this is on their side. Plus, all the regional interest, I think that's the biggest thing. That was my biggest takeaway is how many people in the region, Odessa, Amarillo, everywhere else who could be involved in this as well and come over here to El Paso for not only junior but also adult. That's really interesting.
Got to make this second rink happen. It really seems like it's such a can't miss situation.
War chest on one side. That's all I have to say. EP Sports Commission, the Hockey Association, they're doing all that they can here for this right here.
And no taxpayer dollars. Most important
Impressive.
Thing. Yeah, it is. All right. One down, two to go. Got a lot more to talk about in our 5 o'clock hour, so stay with us. Sports Talk continues right here, heading into the busy weekend. 600 ESPN El Paso. To fill bowl game opportunities if there aren't enough other deserving teams. Now, under the proposal, if all deserving teams have been selected for bowl games and all schools that meet an exception other than the exception for 5 and 7 teams have been selected, a conference that has unfulfilled bowl commitments can choose which of its 5 and 7 teams will participate in that bowl. The conference must choose a 5 and 7 team that has achieved at least a minimum 930 multi-year academic progress rate required to be eligible to participate in the postseason. Currently, if a 5 and 7 team needs to be selected to be in a bowl game, those teams become available as alternates in descending order of their multi-year APR. Now, Nick Carparelli, who's joined us before, executive director of the bowl season, he told ESPN back in January that there were 41 FBS bowl games last season, including the 6 college football playoff bowls. That left 70 teams that played in non-CFP bowls, and only 3 of them were below the 500 bowl eligibility mark at 5 and 7. Carparelli said that over the past 5 seasons, an average of 81 teams played in FBS bowls with a 6-6 record or better. Now, the proposal is not final until it's reviewed by the Division I cabinet during its June meeting. Look, I know you probably know where I stand on this, all right? Look, my thoughts are simply this. We have too many bowl games if we are trying to make exceptions for teams with losing records. Because if you're 5 and 7, that means even if you win your bowl game, you still finish under 500. And I'm sorry, to me, any team under 500 should not be rewarded playing in a postseason game. So I understand the proposal. I understand why they're doing it. But I just feel like, to me, there's too many bowl games if we have to fill some of them with teams that are under 500. The bigger problem, Adrian, is that like last year, there were a lot of bowl-eligible teams that decided not to play in a postseason bowl game. That is, to me, a bigger issue when you voluntarily decide we're not playing than trying to find ways to make more exceptions for 5 and 7 teams to get it.
Yeah, that's a bigger story to it. But before we get to that part of it, why? Like you said, we know why they're doing this or why their proposal's out there. Why is it, Steve? What's your reason? Why do you think that they're doing this right here other than trying to fill all the bowl games? Is it just money? Like, why is it?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest. I think that's the biggest key. I really do.
Well, I'm sad that Nick Caporelli is siding with mediocrity right here because I'm such anti this. It's not even funny. Like, I couldn't. If UTEP, I'll say this right now, Friday, May 8th, UTEP gets into a bowl game at 5 and 7, I will not do minor talk, I think. Well, I think that's
you
gonna
will.
Be hard.
You're,
that's
you
going to be hard.
You okay. know you're going to do minor talk.
I will
talk.
Not go to that game. It's probably going to be the Bahamas.
We're
going
to be live at that game. What do you mean you're not going to go to that game? We're going to be broadcasting. We'll be broadcast. We'll treat it like a Super Bowl.
Okay, then I will make minor talk shirts that say 5 and 7. Okay, how about that? 5 and 7, mediocrity. But if you want to curb opting out of a bowl, they've got to incentivize things. That's what they have to do.
I know. That's
fine teams. If you're not going to incentivize it, then go the other way. Fine teams, fine leagues. You know, if you're going to do the Oregon State model where you fire everybody on the coaching staff and it's your third string guy coming to the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, well, at least play in it, right? Like, they fielded a team. There are teams now who are just opting out and just saying, no way.
That's my biggest problem from last season. Too many teams. It's almost like, oh well, I didn't get my way. Well, I'm gonna just take my ball and go home.
It's terrible.
Yes, I mean, you know what it does? it just sends such a bad message. It really does. Because you're right. That's the bigger problem right now. And I feel like that's why they're trying to do this. They're anticipating more and more teams every year voluntarily opting out of bowl games. And you know what? Rather than fill it with garbage, how about we just get rid of some of these bowl games?
I can't even believe that, you know, just less than 6 months ago, Notre Dame opted out of a bowl game to kind of set the wrong precedent in this right here. Notre Dame opted out of a bowl game, missing this college football playoff. You know who's not going to be voting for Notre Dame this year? People on the college football playoff committee who opted out of a bowl game last year and cost everybody a trickle-down effect because of it.
I know. Could you imagine if this was, if last year would have been the year that maybe, you know, the Sun Bowl could have gotten Notre Dame and they're like, ah, you know, we'd rather not play in a bowl game than come here, you know? And you think about that because we were lucky enough to get them twice. We really were. I mean, that's a, it's an unbelievable opportunity. And I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think we'll ever see Notre Dame here again. I just don't. I feel like we lucked out the second time. And that in itself was pretty amazing when you really think about it.
Lightning striking twice like that. I mean, think about it this way. Like, you're, what you're basically detailing is an ego-driven thing by all these institutions. Oh, we're 7-5. We're not good enough to get to a bowl game. We're opting out. We're 6-6. We're Miami. We're taking a year off from a bowl game. No, like, I don't buy any of that. Even there, if there's a coaching overhaul, let the interim get out there. And then for some of these bowls out there right now, Steve, I think the next part of it is, how do you incentivize things? How do you incentivize teams? How do you incentivize players to play in these bowl games? Because what we're seeing right now is either it's going to go one of two ways. We're either going to continue rolling this out and it's going to be a circus, or we're going to refine things and it could be back to what it was, which was a really good product in the bowl season.
Just imagine if the Mountain West, which has, let's say, 6 tie-ins, right, only sends 4 teams with winning records to a bowl. So then they've got to go ahead and look at 2 of the best 5-7 schools that are still not eligible, but will hit all of these requirements to go bowling. That's what it's talking about, Adrian. It's talking about conferences that have all these bowl affiliations, and guess what? If they don't have enough teams to send, then what? So the idea is, rather than substitute with another conference, they're like, oh, you know what? Let us take an even more mediocre team and send them over.
I would even rather you bump up an FCS team at that at that point. You get more fans.
Agreed.
You'd have more, more skin in the game. Mm-hmm. Money could actually go further there. So like you bring on an FCS squad who could play a team, and these are like the lower level bowls, right? Like, not really. The Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl isn't in jeopardy of something like this. Although, who knows? Maybe a team could opt out last minute, just like Washington State. Weren't they the team who opted out last minute?
Yeah.
And Central Michigan had to come and save the day against Miami. Like, that was crazy in itself too. So we've seen some insane things happen, but it'd probably be like the New Mexico Bowl, right? If the Mountain West or the CUSA team doesn't qualify, okay, bump up an FCS team. Let's bring Montana State to take on, you know, I don't know, New Mexico, something like that, just to have it to where you're playing somebody who's not with a losing record. You're not having to automatically bump up somebody who doesn't deserve to be there in the first place.
41 bowls, though, is so asinine. Like, there's so many bowl games. That means 82 teams are playing in the postseason. Why? You know what? Because of money. That's why. And by the way, 85 or 90% of them are all owned by ESPN. That's
also
another thing.
Of course, you know, who's Nick Caporelli working for? The bowl season, and where are all these bowl games on ESPN? Who does this benefit? The TV partners having more bowl games.
I wish they would go back to like 25 total bowl games, okay? And that means like the 5 or 6 and then another 20 or so that are non-playoff related. And that's enough. That's enough. I would like the fact that winning teams don't necessarily get to go bowling. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, my dad would always tell me about like seasons for UTEP where they were really good,
yes,
but they didn't qualify for a bowl game. And he was like, you know, it was a real controversial thing at times because they'd win, you know, 7 or more games, but they wouldn't qualify for bowl games at those times. And that's kind of interesting in itself. Like, of course they're going to make it in 1988 in the Independence Bowl. Like, of course they're going to make it that time. But the year before, they were 7-5 under Bob Stoll, and they didn't make a bowl game. They didn't qualify. And, you know, you could hear a lot of accounts that that team was just as good in 87.
Now, let's put it this way. If UTEP this year goes 5-7, we probably all agree right now that's a pretty good season for Scotty Walden.
Yes, but you don't hang a banner.
No, you don't go bowling. You don't go bowling. You're right. That's exactly.
That hurts my stomach, man. I don't even want to think of this. This
it
really
should.
I mean, we have to now, right? Because this is going to happen. This is not like we can convince them otherwise. And until they incentivize things, until they find leagues, until they find teams, and it's got to be ESPN. They're the ones who hold the most in this stake. So go to your partners and say, hey, we need you to not have your teams opt out, even if it's an overhaul, even if half the team's in the transfer portal. Throw the walk-ons out there. Like, we've got to figure out a way to get a team with a winning record on the football field in these bowl games versus bringing a 5-7 team out there.
By the way, God almighty. You know, Sports Talk Carlos said that they just made two more bowl games for next season. Like, I'm looking at him right now. Have you? And again, I might be wrong, but the Cricket Celebration Bowl between a MEAC school and a SWAC school. So I understand what that is. I get that. But again, that's part of the bowl schedule. The Cricket Celebration Bowl. And then I'm like looking at the other bowl games and just trying to figure out like what are the new bowl games for 2026?
Puerto Rico Bowl and the Poinsettia Bowl coming back? That's what I'm seeing right now.
Let me see here. I'm looking right now. Is it there's a Puerto Rico Bowl?
Yeah.
Yep, you're right. That's going to be happening as well. Wow. Well,
Bad Bunny halftime?
I guess so. The Poinsettia Bowl coming back too. By the way, the LA Bowl and the Game Above Sports Bowl are now defunct.
Okay, there you go.
For this cycle.
So two out, two back in.
Yeah,
we can addition by subtraction. Poinsettia Bowl, by the way, could have the Mountain West champion expected to participate in that one. So,
oh, really?
Hey, the road to San Diego starts now, Steve.
The Mountain West champ goes to the Poinsettia Bowl?
That's what it says.
All right.
Yeah, could be here. Yeah.
You know, the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl still going on.
Hey, we got some better bowl game affiliates. Oh, man, that's a great point in the Mountain West. Way better bowl affiliates than, you know, having to go to the Frisco Bowl every year and stuff like that.
I'm looking still at the sponsorships. You've got 68 Ventures sponsoring a bowl in Mobile, Alabama. AutoZone, Bad Boy Motors, Bush's Baked Beans, Cheez-It, Duke's Mayo, the Famous Potatoes, Go Bowling, the IS4S Salute to Veterans Bowl. How about in Albuquerque that the fact that the Isleta Amphitheater, they're the one, Isleta is actually sponsoring the bowl game.
Man, that one has just been a merry-go-round of sponsors, hasn't it? Every single year it seems like a new one.
Liberty Mutual, Lockheed Martin, Pop-Tarts, Radiance Technologies, the Rate Bowl, ReliaQuest, ServPro, Scooter's Coffee. I have not had Scooter's Coffee, but if they're sponsoring the Frisco Bowl, that means we should be able to get some Scooter's Coffee around here. Has anybody had Scooter's Coffee? And how do we rank it?
Yeah, Scooter's Coffee, not bad. Sometimes you see it in like hotels though. I wouldn't necessarily say to go out and try, but I've had Scooter's Coffee before, Steve, at one of our NFL experiences that we've had, that
was
we've been to.
Yeah.
One that we've been to.
I haven't had it.
I think we've both unintentionally had it.
Really?
But it was like served to us, the Scooter's Coffee, and I just saw it like branded. But I do remember this at one of the events that we went to.
By the way, the Xbox Bowl. You know that's a CUSA game.
Oh, there you go. I wonder if everybody gets Xboxes. The Mountain West affiliates, by the way, bowl affiliates. Mm. Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl.
Nice.
Idaho Potato Bowl. New Mexico Bowl. Hawaii Bowl. So maybe UTEP goes there twice. And then Scooter's Coffee Bowl. Guaranteed Rate Bowl.
Interesting. All right. There's a lot of bowls. A lot of bowls. How about the famous Idaho Potato Bowl? I see that too in Boise. Do you? The famous Idaho Potato Bowl? Maybe so. I don't know. All right. Let me go to Chuko, and he's got a question for us, and then we'll get to Charlie Wan here in a little bit as we continue. A lot of bowl games. Chuko, what's going on, man?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. It's related to the Sun Bowl. So after this BTS stuff that went on over the weekend and all the calls about long lines and blah, 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 my question is, who actually owns the Sun Bowl? Who is responsible for the upgrades, for all that? Because I've heard it's either the county that owns the land or UTEP. What do you know?
It's the it's basically the Texas system owns the Sun Bowl and the UT system and UTEP. Not the county. The county sold the Sun Bowl back to the University of Texas or the University of Texas system back in in 2001, I think.
So years back when they wanted to put Sun Bowl upgrades up to the voters, why? If it's the UT systems,
it's well that was they did, but that was before the county sold it back.
Oh, okay.
In fact, part of the reason the county got rid of it was UTEP wanted to make changes, and the county said, no, we own it, so you know what? We'll just go ahead and sell it back to you, and then you can put all the changes yourself in, and that's exactly what they started
doing. Wait, I think Chuka was asking the recent, like the Heather Wilson advocating for the Sun Bowl upgrades, right? Am I right there, Chuka?
Yeah, it was recent.
Rio, you're talking about those. Yeah, was it like $100 million?
Yeah, she wanted $200 million from county bonds.
Yeah, and the county was – they don't control the Sun Bowl anymore, so of course they said no to that. I mean, they don't run it anymore. In fact, you know, that's the other thing is UTEP expecting the county to want to put money into the Sun Bowl when they don't even have an operating stake is far-fetched. If I was the county, the only way I would spend any money on the Sun Bowl is if I could get X number of events in that venue ourselves every year. And in that
guaranteed.
In that case, probably the Texas system would say no chance.
Well, I hope something gets done because obviously we keep hearing the same thing about lines and bad people running the show or whatever. But, I mean, for the future of the bowl game itself as well, I mean, I hope that, someone comes along and says, you know what, we got to do it.
There you go. Appreciate you, Chuko. Thanks for the call, man. Good to hear from you. All right. I know I've got Charlie on the lines. Eddie's with us as well as we can. Let me duck in Eddie real quick. I apologize for not getting you up sooner, but let's hear what Eddie, the mayor out in LC, has to say. Eddie, what's going on, man?
Well, I'm really glad that you guys are saying all the truthful and right things about the Bulls right now. It really makes me happy that you're speaking truth. And I want to just say something about what Adrian said about ESPN having a, I guess, some pull in all this, right?
A ton of pull.
I'll never forget, I'll never forget how they used to have so much say in all these meetings, at the bowl season meetings. And for example, they would give a big presentation about how good, and they were all good stuff, but they would never mention the Sun Bowl.
Of course not. They had no say in it. They couldn't control the Sun Bowl.
And you know who always said something? We always did.
There you go. Good for you. I love it.
Well, thank you guys for speaking truth, man. Much love to you guys. See you guys at Chihuahuas.
You got it, Eddie. Good job, man. Let's go to Charlie. 22 pass. He's got a traffic update for us. Charlie, how are the streets? 26 past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk 505. 6009, our telephone number. Wow, I didn't even realize it until right now. We are a week away for the deadline to protest for most counties with your property taxes. A week away. Man, I have talked so much about Own Well on this radio program. It's coming down to the wire, folks. And I'm going to tell you right now, chances are if you live in El Paso and you've received your property tax assessment letters from the county, you realize that your value has gone up considerably. And most of you out there probably have never even protested your home's value to pay less in property taxes. Well, you know something? You could be missing out on hundreds or even thousands of dollars. I am all about decreasing my tax bill this year. That's why the team at Own Well is determining for me if my property or even your property has been overassessed. Check your savings estimate and even reduce what you owe. You know what the best part about Own Well is? You can sign up in just 3 minutes and then see how much Own Well can save you. They make saving money on property taxes easy year after year. And by the way, part of the reason I'm excited about Own Well is the amount of money I can save. New customers, on average, $774 of savings a year just by signing up. They also have an 88% success rate in reducing property taxes. That deadline, folks, is coming. Don't wait. May 15th for most counties. Save money on your property taxes with Ownwell. Sign up in less than 3 minutes at Ownwell.com. That's Ownwell.com. Let them know I sent you when you complete your sign up at Ownwell.com. Part and the most ironic part about all of this bull talk. Here we are, and we're saying, what a waste. You're rewarding mediocrity. It's garbage. You're like, wait a minute. Why not UTEP at 5-7?
You would be happy about that. Yeah, like, let's say they win the bowl game and they're 6-7. Is it really a win in a bowl game? Did you really qualify?
You know what would be the weirdest thing about that? Could you imagine if they're breaking almost a 60-year drought in terms of bowl wins? Because their last bowl win came in 1967.
Yeah.
So imagine if they break a 60-year drought and they still finish under 500.
Oh, no. That would be the most UTEP way to get a bowl win. That would be the most UTEP accomplishment to make sure that you're out there and getting to a bowl victory on your side. I mean, even the season when they were 7-5 to close out the year, they finished 7-6 because of the loss in the New Mexico Bowl.
They won, what, 2 games last year?
Yes.
Okay. And with this schedule, I would say, I mean, look, I'm not predicting them to go 5-7. I'm predicting them probably to go 3-9 or at best 4-8. They go 5-7. That's serious. That's a serious coaching job right there by Scotty Walden.
Don't say they deserve to go to a bowl game.
They don't. They don't deserve to go to a bowl game. But you want to know something? Nobody at 5-7 deserves to go to a bowl game. So if some other, you know, team is going to get to take advantage and go, why not here? I don't know. I'm just saying it. Like, give UTEP that chance. You're going to reward mediocrity. How about our mediocre team here at UTEP instead of somebody else?
I'm laughing because maybe 5-7 is a banner year for UTEP. Knowing
this upcoming year. Yeah.
Yeah. Knowing how bad it's been as of late. Like, if you can get 5-7, maybe that's it. Maybe you hang a banner there.
Right now, looking at the schedule and knowing what they have and what they're going up against, tell me you wouldn't be thrilled if in year 3 of Scotty Walden they go 5-7.
Because that means they're probably beating one of, if not multiple, of the likes of New Mexico, and that's on the road, by the way, Oregon State, who they're hosting for their final non-conference game on September 26th. They're beating one of North Dakota State, Air Force, or NIU, Northern Illinois. And then they're winning all those home games.
Yes.
So, the answer to me is I would be thrilled if they could do that, because then that means you're taking wins away from ones that we probably right now are putting as L's on pencil.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that one. I am with you. And I know it sounds ridiculous, and our listeners are probably like, what the hell's wrong with you two? Like, what are you doing? Why are you on this radio show advocating UTEP going to a bowl game at 5-7? Hey, I get it. It sounds ridiculous, but, you know, at this point, it's been such a tough last, I don't know, 60 years of watching this team play. Maybe we just need to lower the standards. Maybe this is what it comes down to.
The bar is that low.
Yeah, we're setting the bar low.
Oh, man, I'm actually not okay with it. I'm here on the program telling you I will be at that game. I will cover that game. We'll do minor talk after that game if it ever happens, hypothetically. Yep. I'm not a fan of that whatsoever.
I would be much happier if they got rid of 15 bowl games, had like 25 or 26 total, including the playoffs, and let's just say there were 20 games plus the 6 playoff games, and that meant you basically had the top 40 teams outside of the other 12. So you had 52 teams in the country get in. I would be much happier with that. But it's not going to happen.
But that's a better solution to me in my eyes, like way better solution. And then the quick story real quick is after that bowl season with the Miners in 2022, they followed it up with a 5-7 season, and everybody was so upset. Remember how upset everybody was after that year in 2022, which, by the way, first year for Cade McConnell that year. But people were really upset with the late Dana Dimmel after that season.
They were. And now here we are, and we're like, Hey, man, 5 wins would be a great coaching job. Great coaching job. All right, we're going to get back to the phones in a moment, but first, right back to Adrian. He has this bottom of the hour Sports Center update. See Adrian, 35 past the hour, 505-6009, our telephone number. Let's swing it out to Sports Talk Carlos as we continue on the show. Sports Talk Carlos, how are you?
Good, Steve. How about you?
No complaints. Getting ready for the weekend.
Yeah. Hey, I promise this isn't a troll call, but I have to agree with you guys. We need the same amount of games as we have now. We should not get rid of them. There's nothing better than turning on a bowl game at 11 o'clock or 2 p.m. on Monday.
We're losing Carlos's call. He's got this great sarcastic
You sound
response.
Like AI, Carlos.
He does. You know what it sounds like to me? Who's the one that always has cell phone issues?
I don't. Is this Domingo? No, I'm just kidding. No. I don't know. I know who we're talking about.
But we have like one that always seems to have... What?
Come on. This is terrible by
Carlos,
me.
Are you in better signal area now? Because this has happened to you before, Carlos. This is
Gator
why,
Richard.
This is why normally, exactly. This is why normally Carlos always hits us on the app and not on the phones. But hopefully that the signal's better. Is it better now, Carlos?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. There was no problem before.
You're still having issues. Let me hear. Try it again. We'll see if we can get through this line because you had this great line about turning on the TV on a Monday at 11 o'clock, and then we lost you.
Okay, so there's nothing better than turning on the TV on Monday at 11 or 2 o'clock and seeing live sports, especially a football game. So, if you don't.
Man, we tried again. Sorry, Carlos, yeah. Man. Bad phone call. Bad quality today. We just couldn't hack it. We gave him a second shot, too, and that phone just does not want to work today.
Yeah, get off the Gator Richard plan, man, and get on to a better phone coverage plan.
All right. But I think I get what he's coming from. I do. I understand. Look, if we should have a poll right now. Put it on the poll about should UTEP, if UTEP was on the board at 5-7, would you be happy seeing the Miners play in a bowl game? That's the question.
Okay.
If UTEP was, you know, was eligible, was, you know, met all the requirements at 5-7, would you want the Miners to play in a bowl game? Yes or no? Simple. And that's, I'm really interested to know on May the 8th, where UTEP fans are regarding their feelings towards the football program. Because, like you said, when they went from 7-5 to 5-7, fans were ticked off. At this point, would fans be like, oh yeah, baby, sign us up. It's a win. It's a, you know, we're winning the West at 5-7 and going to the postseason. Or are fans like, stop it. And some fans will even tell you 6-6 isn't good enough. You want to be over 500. You don't want to be at 500. You don't want to be under 500. You want to be 7-5 or better, which is another reason why you have too many bowl games. Because, you know, if you had 15 fewer games, everybody in these bowl games would be 7-5 or better. You wouldn't be having all these 6-6 teams or under.
I mean, for me, Steve, I'm voting no right now, publicly on the show, not fan whatsoever. I wouldn't be a fan of this in November or December if that ever happened. I would almost like want to have a conversation with everybody behind the scenes at UTEP and just be like, look, just don't do it. Don't be the 5-7 bowl team. And they'd probably convince me otherwise and say, hey, it's good for our young guys to get valuable experience in a bowl game atmosphere. You know, one extra game.
Yeah, I think so, too. By the way, there's 136 FBS teams, okay? That means we have 82 of the 136 teams playing in the postseason. How ridiculous is that? 82 out of 136, Adrian? Are you kidding me? Let me see here.
Gets a trophy. That's what it is.
Do you realize that 60% of all FBS teams are playing in a bowl game? 60%.
That's just, I just don't say, I think it diminishes the quality and the value of bowl games at that point. Like, I was citing my dad earlier, who was telling me, like, if you were 7-4, it didn't guarantee you a bowl game. If you were 8-5, like 8-3 mm-hmm. or whatever, didn't guarantee you a bowl game back in the 80s, in the 70s. Like, you didn't not have a chance to play postseason football. Now we're trying to make exceptions. We're going the complete other way. No, it's not a big deal to make a bowl game. We want everybody in. We want 5-7 in.
You know what would be the coolest thing ever? I just thought about this, okay? What if, I'm going to give you the greatest thing to think about as we head to the break. I just thought of this right now. What if you add one more bowl game, and it truly is the Toilet Bowl, and you have the two worst teams of the 136, you've got 135 and 136 playing in the Toilet Bowl, but the winner of the Toilet Bowl gets $5 million to spend on their roster for the next season.
The Battle of I-10 is already not coming in 2027, 2026.
Think about it, though. Think about it.
No, that's actually a great idea. $5 million isn't a great idea.
Think about
this. I love
this.
It. It's like the NBA lottery. It's like the NFL
yes.
draft.
The two worst teams in college football get to play, and the winner of that game gets $5 million in NIL for their roster next season.
They could do this out of the country, like, and shop this around. Like, if ESPN wanted to really do this, right? You could do this in London. You could do this, like,
Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia. They'll pay for it all.
Absolutely.
They'll double down. They'll give you $10 million.
Hey, we could be bringing Minor Talk live from Saudi Arabia after a huge win.
Oh, yeah. And then maybe that'll be the last one. Never again.
Could be. Could very well be. No, I'm serious, though. That would be, I know people are like, you got to be kidding me. You're going to reward the two worst. Well, listen, we've talked about the Toilet Bowl for years, but I just do believe that if you took the two worst teams and you gave a $5 million NIL payout to the winner, do you realize on the line how many people will be watching that game to see how that goes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, fully intact, right? That's the other thing, is you got to make sure those teams are fully intact still. Maybe you do it like right after the season's over. So this last year could have been like Charlotte, who was 1-11, versus Massachusetts, who was 0-12.
From what I understand, based on the rankings I see, and again, I don't know if this is true, but according to ESPN's SP Plus rankings, it would have been winless UMass and 2-10 Sam Houston competing in the Toilet Bowl.
Yeah, there you go. Because that's right. One of Sam Houston's wins was, I think, against an FCS team. So, mm-hmm. And the other one was against Oregon State, interestingly enough.
Yeah, that's right. UTEP, they beat Sam Houston last year.
That's right, yeah.
I was at that game.
That's right.
I was there.
One of the few.
By the way, UTEP was ranked 129 out of 136.
Pretty close.
Pretty close.
You could do a tournament there, bracket.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Bottom 10 bracket, something like that?
The bottom 10, so it's like a Toilet Bowl playoff?
Then you really incentivize it. $10 million right there.
Wow, the $10 million Toilet Bowl playoff. That would be interesting.
Then you have teams tanking. Then the worst thing is when Kentucky goes 0-11 for mm-hmm. one season, you're like, wait a second, how do they lose all these games?
No, the caveat is it can only be a group of five teams. It can't be.
Oh, that'd be great.
It can't be any of the power force.
How did Liberty go 0-12 one year?
All right, 5:43 now. The time as we continue here on Sports Talk. We're thinking, folks. We're coming up with ideas here on the show. That's what it's all about. 505-6009. Back to wrap up hour two right after this.
Studio. Here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
Who doesn't love Earth, Wind, and Fire? A little September for you as we get ready to celebrate our final 30 minutes with you on the program. We'll get Hags and story time in just a little bit. You think Hags is going aliens tonight?
I hope so. A lot of aliens going on right now.
Well, yeah. Trump released the alien files
today. I know.
Today.
And then all over our radio station earlier today, Steve, on the national radios, they were taking calls like on, I think it was Ian and Harry, like asking people across the country to give them their best UFO stories. It was wild.
That is wild. I liked it. Well, maybe we can get Hags to give us his best UFO story. Wouldn't you want to hear that from Hags?
You know he's seen one, right?
Guaranteed. All right, but before we do that, let's jump out to our Longhorn Distributing Hotline. It's been a busy one today. A lot of great guests, including this man, the longtime director of equipment operations at SMU, El Paso native Albert Noodles Vaitia. And he joins us live on the program right now. Noodles, it's been a while. I know you were in town earlier this week. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
We tried to make it work. We really did. You and I, we tried to put a live show together downtown at the convention center. Unfortunately, we just couldn't pull it off. But I know you had an unbelievable trip home this week as all of the equipment managers and directors from around the country in college athletics gathered here for your annual convention. Let's talk a little bit about that, Noodles.
Actually, it was the Power Four equipment managers from the ACC, the SEC, Big Ten, Big 12. It was those guys. Plus, it was about, I'm guessing, about 60 different vendors that put out displays and made presentations on far as anything new product. But every school was well represented. I know SMU, we had six equipment managers there.
Wow.
So we had an awesome time. We really did.
I heard UTEP had the opportunity to be part of it because it was in their backyard. I talked to Chris Annan, and he told me he was there. And I'm happy that since it was here in El Paso, even though it's all Power Fours, you gave UTEP an opportunity to stop by and check it out.
Yeah, I don't know him. I knew Secco Walker still one of my best friends.
Yep.
And I know we got to talk about that, but I don't know anybody at UTEP anymore. So I do stay in touch with a lot of people that left UTEP. Matter of fact, I saw Lisa Campos a few months ago. She came by my office to see me, and we had a great talk. And one of the things about anybody that's been to El Paso, you will never hear anybody say anything negative about the city. It has got to be the most accommodating, most hospitable city in the United States. And what I told a lot of these equipment guys that were calling me up going, El Paso? And I said, well, just give it a chance. I guarantee you it'll be more hospitable than any other city that we'll ever have this convention at. And I didn't see one person say a negative remark all week. The food was great. Entertainment was great. The accommodations were great. And of anything, we found out who BTS is.
That's right. BTS. No doubt about it. Noodles, how long was this this trip in the works trying to bring El Paso as the host city for your Power 4 equipment convention?
This is SMU's third year in the Power 4. So my first year, it was at Dallas, then Houston, and I thought for sure it was going to end up in Kansas City. And about January, Matt Rutherford from Texas calls me up and he says it's going to be in El Paso. Well, I thought it was just somebody was joking around, trying to have some fun with me. And then Brad Camp from Oklahoma called me up. He goes, hey, we're going to El Paso. I need three restaurants. And that's when I knew it was for real. And then so I thought, wow, that's crazy. So, but like I said, I cannot reiterate enough how accommodating this place really was.
So, in other words, El Paso bid on it, and they won it in terms of the site for this year.
You know what? How it came into fruition?
How?
I guess Sun Bowl hosted all the bowls 2 years ago, all the bowl committee people.
That's correct.
And Bernie did such an excellent job with accommodations and hospitality. Some of those bowl people, the information trickled down to the equipment guys. And when they really got serious about it, that's when they started calling me up saying, we need three restaurants, bus company. And I told them different hotels. The only thing that we did not expect is for BTS to be here right on that Saturday, Sunday night, which made get to El Paso a little bit harder. But you know what? I stayed at the DoubleTree for one night, and Maria, who is the front desk supervisor there, she did an excellent job of accommodating all these equipment guys that were coming in there. And there's nothing that will make equipment managers more happy than free drinks, and so she supplied those.
Very nice. Albert Noodles Vatia with us here on Sports Talk. He is the director of equipment operations at SMU. Been there about 15 years. Pretty remarkable. Where else, Noodles, have you worked as far as equipment since you started in this business?
next season's going to be my 40th year in the business. And I've been at several different universities, including SMU, North Texas. I started at UTEP. Spent 8 years in the NFL with Kansas City, Jacksonville, and the Buccaneers. But I also spent 2 years in the original USFL.
Wow.
And then I also spent 1 year in the Canadian Football League when they had five American teams. So, but probably the most rewarding experience that I've ever got to spend in my profession is 3 years in NFL Europe, in which we played in the off season of the NFL season. And I spent 2 years in Barcelona and 1 year in Frankfurt. And when I write my book, there's going to be a long chapter about Barcelona.
I'm looking forward to that book. By the way, what year did you actually get started, period, in this business?
To show my age, 1976.
Wow.
Was my first year at UTEP, but I went to Coronado High School in 1972. I was a freshman, and I was only about 4'3", 67 pounds, and my first class at Coronado was P.E., and Sergio Guerrero was my PE coach, and he gave me the name Noodles. That's how the name Noodles started. And then he asked me to be the manager of the basketball team, and that's how this whole thing got started. And when I graduated at Coronado's, former Coronado quarterback Steve Smith, and he went to UTEP, his father was a defensive coordinator at UTEP, and they gave me a scholarship. And that's really how my career in football got started. And it was something that I loved, something that I developed a passion for. And it's something that I thank the Lord every day for giving me the opportunity to go the places I've been. Because I know I would have never seen some of the places I've been to without being in the profession.
So as we continue our conversation with Albert Noodles Vady here on the program, it sounds like the trip was great. El Paso was given a great review by all of the Power 4 equipment teams that were here. You had booths, presentations. You had a very busy itinerary. I know Chihuahua's baseball was there, dinners and as well, and all the different things. So you kept people busy. As a whole, how much do you guys look to change things up year after year? Because I would always think that most of you equipment guys want to keep things the same every year. But, like, what did you see in El Paso that made you think, hey, you know what, we could incorporate that maybe in the next year or two?
Well, to continue about the hospitality real quick, we went to the Chihuahuas game on Tuesday night, and we were in one of those right field party rooms and all that. The Chihuahuas gear was a huge hit, and those guys were going down there spending money, coming back, showing each other all that different gear, and I thought that was hilarious. That equipment guys, of all people, were so enamored with the mascot. But one of the things that we talked about over the 3-4 days is what hurts us a lot is the portal. Because it's a constant change of personnel for us. So it's a gathering of information all the time, especially football. You're going to lose 20, 30 players every year. So when you lose those players, you're going to get 20, 30 new ones. Before these kids even get to you on campus, you have to find out helmet size, shoe size, what face masks they wear, any different shoe problems they have, shoulder problems. So you have to prepare for that. And 7 years ago, I moved over to basketball. Mm-hmm. I had finally had enough with football. And I moved over to basketball. And we've had a turnover of 8 players every year. So basically, you're meeting new kids all the time. And the portal is something that affects the equipment room quite a bit.
Interesting. It really is because, yeah, players get gear 1 year and then they're gone and you got to find it's like an annual turnover for you guys. No doubt.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time. And I know UTEP lost a lot of players. So those guys go somewhere else. And so not only is an equipment manager making phone calls to try and find out sizes, he's getting phone calls and emails of kids that have left. And now you're kind of working two different directions at the same time. And as equipment managers, we want to help each other out. We're a very, very close group. So we'll help each other out as much as we can. And I don't mind passing along information to other equipment guys. And I feel like that's just an obligation that I have towards the younger guys to help them out.
Could you see El Paso getting this convention again years, years from now?
It would probably be, we'd have to go through a cycle of a whole bunch of cities. But with that said, as the word goes around, who's to say that the trainers won't go there?
Good point.
Possibly the video. One of the huge conventions every year is the American Football Coaches Association convention. And that bounces around between San Antonio, Charlotte, and that's every football coach in the country, every different level, and many of the big high schools, they send their football coaches to this. So that's something that El Paso ought to aim at and bring them there.
You
probably remember the Texas versus the Nation game that
very
they had
well.
There.
We broadcasted that game, so yes, I remember that. Remember that game very well.
There's still coaches and scouts that always ask me, "Goes, God, we'd love to come to El Paso for that. We had a great time."
Yep, I believe.
Now, like I said, any team that goes to the Sun Bowl, one of my best friends, equipment manager at Florida State, he really wasn't looking forward to going to El Paso. After spending 4 days there, he said that was the most accommodating bowl game he's ever been to. And the highlight of his trip, we went over to Andy Aguilar's mom's house, and this is the first time he ever had an El Paso-style Christmas of tamales and menudo.
Perfect. So, perfect. I love it.
Nothing says El Paso more than menudo and tamales.
Good job. Hey, listen, Noodles, it's great connecting with you. I'm so happy you had a great time. I'm sorry we couldn't see you, but I know we did everything you could to try to get us out there, and we appreciate that. And we'll look forward to having you back on and talking more shop with you here down the road.
Oh, absolutely. I really appreciate it, Steve. And by the way, I was listening when you were talking about Ownwell.
Yes.
I'm a very satisfied Ownwell customer. Trust me.
I believe it. They'll love to hear that, too. Good job. Good job, Noodles. That's Albert Vatia, folks, as we continue here on the show. We'll get story time up next as we continue 600 ESPN El Paso. Tim Haggerty, who will have another story time for all of us here tonight.
In 1999, 78-year-old Norm Michael was sitting in his home in upstate New York reading the newspaper. His sports section listed every player from Syracuse University who had been drafted by an NFL team. And he saw his own name. This was the first he had heard of it. Michael told the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle newspaper, quote, "I still haven't heard from the Eagles." Here's what happened. Michael was a big, powerful fullback for Syracuse in the 1940s. The Philadelphia Eagles drafted him in the 18th round of the 1944 NFL draft. But Michael had enlisted in the Army and was training at a base in Alabama at the time of the draft. The Eagles couldn't find him. They sent a message, but his contact information was outdated, so they proceeded with their training camp without him. Do you guys think you've ever been unknowingly drafted by an NFL team?
No. Unfortunately, no. We probably would have heard about that. Right, Adrian?
That's a great story, though. As soon as you were going with that, I was like, uh-oh, I know where you're going with this. But don't you remember the days? Well, I guess you guys remember them much better than me. But I loved the days when I would go the day after the draft and read every name in the newspaper. Like, yeah. I loved doing that. And I don't think they do that anymore.
I wonder if there was ever a baseball draft like that. Well, no, the baseball amateur draft started when? In the... There wasn't
1960s, I believe.
It would have had to be Vietnam. Maybe somebody was shipped off to Vietnam and didn't realize they were drafted.
Could have been. You imagine the reaction. It wasn't as if someone with the Eagles eventually found this guy. He's sitting there on a regular day reading the newspaper, and that's how he found out.
You know, there's actually been a lot of recent stories, Hags. I'm glad you went football because there's been recent stories about this, and it's been awful. Like, last year, Shedeur Sanders was prank called multiple times on day two by people impersonating to be a New Orleans Saints official. And then Abdul Carter, same thing. He ends up going to the Giants, but he actually got fraudulent calls from people claiming they were with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So this has happened recently as far as like weird NFL call issues in the in football.
That's true. That is true. Hags, on in another crazy, interesting note today, the Trump had released all the UFO files. We're finding out all of these interesting things involving UFOs. Have you ever had any sighting that you believe was out of the ordinary and could have been UFO related?
I remember as a kid going to hockey practice one time and felt like I saw something circular in the sky that didn't really look like an airplane. Since then, have I? I think they're certainly possible. I personally have never seen anything that would end up on a TV show or anything, though.
Okay. So nothing that's out, completely out of the ordinary. The reason I ask is you travel to so many games in so many cities. Maybe you've been bound to see something strange in the sky at night.
Yeah, I'm racking my brain right now. I didn't even see that news story. Adrian told me about it before we came on. So I feel unprepared for any UFO incidents. I feel that ghosts are more likely than UFOs. I think both are certainly possible. But to me, I think ghost vibes, there's more evidence there.
Do you believe we'll be visited by UFOs during your lifetime? Like, you will actually, before you leave this earth, you would have seen something that is completely, out of our planet.
I would vote no on that. But the thing that makes me think that they're possible is that you have these qualified military, Air Force, NASA-type people who think they've seen things that they can't explain. And these are the real experts that are up there, that are trained, that are in the sky. And if they say it's possible, I think we should believe it.
Hags, as far as other players, or have you ever encountered anybody who's just like a super pro UFO person? Like all they do in the base, outside of the baseball field, whatever capacity they're, if they're a coach, if they're on the team, but they're just a UFO nut. Have you ever met anybody like that?
I think in general, when you overhear players talking, like a lot of guys, some wild theories get tossed around. I think UFOs certainly are a topic. I think they like talking about different conspiracy theories and that type of thing. But as far as a guy who's singularly devoted to out of this, universe or whatever it would be, out of this galaxy,
yes,
nobody comes to mind, no.
We tried, Adrian. We did.
Maybe one day. He'll be visited, and then he'll have a new story to tell us on Storytime.
That's a good point. Hey, I think this week the Rockies revealed Glazilla. It's like a $45 gigantic hot dog. And two of the broadcasters for the Mets, Steve Gelbs and Keith Hernandez, started eating the Glazilla from each side of the hot dog. Kind of weird and creepy, but funny in the sense. And I was trying to figure out, is there any other broadcaster that you would ever want to split a hot dog like that with on the air during a broadcast? Like a Glazilla.
$45 for a hot dog?
Yeah. It's a big hot dog.
Yeah. You know, like something like that, I might ask them, hey, can we tape something in the afternoon? Like just eating in the booth during the game.
It's
be challenging when you're solo. But.
It's a 2-foot-long, 1-pound hot dog. $45, served on a 19-inch bun, designed for sharing. Like, you're telling me that if you and Josh Sushan weren't together, you guys wouldn't want to start eating a hot dog on each side and see who could finish it first?
It's intriguing. How did he pull off the play-by-play, though? So Gary Cohen's calling the game.
Yes.
And those guys are
Steve
munching.
Gelbs and Keith Hernandez are each eating one side of the Glazilla.
Yeah, that might make it easier when you have somebody to actually carry the important star.
Good
stuff
point.
Of the broadcast.
Yeah.